Hello, everybody, and welcome to Mind Clickers. I'm your host, Lachlan, a sport and exercise scientist and performance coach from the Renegades. I'm from Melbourne, Australia, and I have a deep passion for esports performance, counselling, science, and how we can holistically improve our athletes' quality of life. I created Mind Clickers to provide an insight into the psychological and performance demands of elite-level gaming. This includes getting an insight from professional players, coaches, shoutcasters, organizational owners, and esports researchers about their respective domains. In the following episode, I had the pleasure of chatting with Casey Thomas, who is a performance dietitian at UCLA Athletics, and has also wrote a thesis looking at energy drinks and their cognitive effect on elite-level League of Legends players. Casey's passion for nutrition really shines through as we explore esports nutrition and supplementation, food for youth, regulation, and various dieting protocols, including intermittent fasting and keto. Casey also includes and talks about a full-fledged caffeine implementation protocol for esports teams and players. He talks about the importance of addressing different dosages and timings and what this looks like in regards to preparation. I really hope you enjoy this episode, as I know I did, and I know it's a bit of a long one, so thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 2, Episode 14 of Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2021. I'm joined today by Casey Thomas, who is a performance nutritionist who also does private practice work, formerly working with UCLA over in the US, and has also completed a thesis looking at energy drinks and their cognitive effect on the elite level League of Legends players. How are you going today, mate?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
No worries. I know we've been discussing about this for a little while now, so I'm really glad that we made the time to jump on and record it. And I'm really interested to rip apart and extrapolate tons of different things about what you've been working on and pick your brain about some really awesome topics.
I'm excited too. Whatever you want to talk about, hopefully I have some valuable information.
No worries. I guess we'll start off as we usually do here on Mind Clickers. Just a introduction about yourself, background, if you've done some work in traditional sports and where you've been in esports as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess to start, back in my undergrad, I was actually a neurobiology major, and I had aspirations of being like a brain surgeon or a spinal surgeon, something like that.
Wow.
But the brain has always fascinated me. And when I started doing rotations with doctors and just shadowing them around, I really decided that that was the opposite of what I wanted to do. I wasn't particularly enjoying the medical scene as much. So what I did after I graduated was I actually instead went to go work in the private sector in clinical research. And so I actually was working in clinical research for about 5 years, but specifically what we were doing was we were investigating different supplements and pharmaceutical compounds and their impact on different brain conditions. Predominantly, we were working with the psychiatric population, but we also work with other more healthy populations as well. And so just a quick little sidebar here. By this time, I had already had a private practice as a nutritionist. Nutritionist is, at least in America, technically not a credentialed term. The dietitian is the one that is the credentialed term. And so I was me and you were both, you're a nutritionist, your listeners are all nutritionists, everybody's a nutritionist in America these days. So I had... I had been doing that. I had been a nutritionist as private practice. It had always just been something that fascinated me. And what gave me my first exposure to athletes was this work in clinical research. And the main reason, just being candid, was that I started pulling in these athletes who were looking for some kind of supplement or pharmaceutical compound that could assist them, but it wasn't yet on the drug test panels. So they were looking for the next big thing, essentially. And so I started working with this population of very high level athletes during that time. And I really fell in love with it. And one thing that I would just want to point out is that the elite level, really what separates first from second is something that's neurological rather than something that's physiological. And so I started having tremendous success with implementing different sorts of nutrition interventions geared towards mental performance rather than physical performance with these athletes. Sure, I helped them with physical too, but anyway. So working in private practice, working in clinical research, and I realized this nutrition thing was really what I wanted to do. So I went back to school, became a dietitian. I created a sports nutrition program on my campus. And from there, I actually did the thesis that you were talking about. And so that was looking, you know, as you said, it was working with this population of elite level athletes, specifically League of Legends. We had access to a team and we wanted to see, does an energy drink beverage improve their performance? And so that was kind of what we investigated. And it was a really fun topic. And I got to meet some really cool people while I was doing that. But that's kind of where I, up until that time point, after that time point, I was working with more traditional athletes, as well as doing consulting work for some esports programs. And I actually got clued in or keyed in with the UCLA esports team. And then I started branching out. My alma mater, UCI, has been killing it with their esports program. So I've been able to, you know, do some presentations with them. And I stay busy working with all sorts of people these days.
Fantastic. It's really interesting. I love that. One thing that I can kind of draw about that. So you, obviously working with traditional athletes that whole time, what made you do the thesis in esports? What made you make that transition from, I guess, physical domained athletes to more so the cognitive space?
Right. So part of it was in traditional sports world, everything that will boost you physiologically is essentially banned. So the anti-doping agencies, they say steroids are not allowed. That's an obvious no-no. But the link between something that can boost your brain performance and actual physiological performance, like your sprint time, for example, that link is less clear. And so you get a free pass to use whatever you want. And as I said, with very high-level athletes, you know, boosting neurological capacity and, you know, reaction speed and those kind of things. If you think about different kinds of sports like baseball, for example, which is not really a physically demanding sport, but you have to have great hand-eye coordination. You have to have great reaction speed. These kind of sports, I was having success by boosting the brain, which is kind of like, you know, the hardware of the body, and you can get amazing results. Yeah. And so I had this interest and I had a professor who was working with this population. And so the two kind of was a nice marriage because I was like, okay, well, I'm doing a lot of brain stuff already. I love this brain stuff. I also love video games. I grew up as a gamer, you know, I was playing like the original Pokemon, the original Smash Brothers. You know, I grew up on the OG Nintendo. Yeah. But anyway, so never very great at games, but I love them. And I, you know, so anyway, it was a nice marriage between improving elite performance as well as, you know, this brain component. So that was kind of how I moved into that direction.
Fantastic. I love that kind of, you had that previous passion for the brain. And then obviously with that professor, it definitely came in and you were able to really slide in nicely and, you know, complete something that was, I guess, you know, had a domain interest and also too feels that necessity. Because I think that in regards to esports literature, it's not very populated in comparison to traditional sports, right? In regards to traditional sports, we have so much literature, whether that be more so the physical side of stuff, more so the sports psychology kind of domain kind of stuff. But in terms of esports, I think probably within the last couple of years, it's only started to gain traction. And I think, you know, if we have more theses, more research coming into the field, it's only going to provide more of a holistic vision of what we need for these esports athletes to ensure performance and ensure longevity.
I think you're absolutely right. And there's a huge gap in the literature right now, but I do know some labs and some people who are really trying to, you know, they realize that esports is a thing. I don't know why it took them so long for them to actually realize that, but now researchers are actually curious about it. And the people who are former gamers themselves are usually the people who are instigating these studies, which is kind of fun because now they're at an age where they can go on to be, you know, getting their own PhDs and all that kind of stuff. So we are seeing this rise in the literature. One little shout out that I'll give is UCI hosts this yearly like research conference, and they post, you know, everyone's talking about their different research at specifically for esports there. And I was very fortunate last year to be able to present, you know, I was on a panel there for them, but they have top researchers from like all over and they all present there. And it's really amazing. So if you're looking to get up to date on esports literature, esports scientific literature, which is, you know, a small field. I would definitely check that out.
Yeah, definitely. I can definitely put that in the show notes afterwards for everyone listening. I know we've got a researcher from all around the world tuning in, so definitely chuck it in the show notes just so we can, you know, extrapolate and share all this key crucial information.
Love it.
Sure. So let's talk esports nutrition. When I think esports nutrition, or if I thought esports nutrition maybe like a year or two ago, right, I would think specific nutrition catered towards cognitive performance, for example. What is your take on esports nutrition, and, you know, why has this been such a topic for, you know, marketing companies, for example?
Yeah, I think just to kind of lay the groundwork a little bit for this is, first off, for some reason, there's this idea that the mind and the body are two different things. And there's this mind-body split that's going on. And frequently people think that what influences the body doesn't influence the mind, and what influences the mind doesn't influence the body. And right, this couldn't be further from the truth. You know, the brain is literally part of your body. and it's kind of the highest, you know, it's like the top of the funnel. It's like, this has influences on literally everything else that you do. Like, if you, you know, physically, if you want to contract a muscle, that action originated in your brain, right? So you want to think a thought, obviously that's in your brain, but anything that your body is trying to do, that happened first in your brain. And so if you can improve the brain, you can improve everything that your body's doing. And the brain is consuming something like 20% of your calories. Like, it depends on how physically active you are, but your brain is a very energy demanding organ. Okay. It says me, me, me all the time. And it's constantly demanding all these nutrients, and it does it for a reason. It's because it's doing so much stuff. Okay. It's doing much more than your other organs. And because you're, I mean, if you just think about it, right, it's like your car, you have to put the right fuel in it. If you put, you know, just like alcohol in your car, it's not going to run too good. You need to give the right fuel to your brain. It's using an insane amount of fuel already, but just thinking about it, you can imagine that giving your brain the right fuel is going to lead to better brain performance than not having the right fuel. And a lot of times people, you know, they also have this idea as far as the brain's concerned that you can't really change your brain. You know, a lot of people say like, oh, if you lose a neuron, that's it. You're screwed for the rest of your life. That's also not true. Okay. Your brain is constantly growing and turning over new cells throughout the lifespan. And it's in fact still growing all the way up until as much as the age of 25. So a lot of these esports athletes who are, you know, just coming out of their teen years, their brain is still growing. And if you're trying to build something, okay, you need to input the right building materials if you want it to be quality on the back end. You can't input trash and like expect an output of amazing. It's literally going to build whatever it can from the resources you give it. So this idea that you can use nutrition to physically build the brain as well as physically fuel the brain, that much is very well validated in the research, and you can definitely do different tips or different strategies to improve different metrics of performance.
Yeah, fantastic. I love that we can use, I guess, you know, nutrition to fuel the brain and build the brain. That's fantastic. I love that. And I especially, you know, one thing that comes to mind when we talk esports nutrition and I guess upcoming is youth athletes, right? Age to entry in esports is getting lower and lower. We're getting professionals that are 13, 14, 15 years old entering the scene. So in regards to these guys, you know, their brain's not even really fully developed in that sense. So, you know, what kind of things can we start to cater towards, I guess, those youth entry level professionals starting to come into the scene, especially when you said, as you mentioned earlier, you know, when we get to that elite level, the difference is, you know, the things that we do outside of the game, you know, whether it's our nutrition, whether it's our exercise, our sleeping, all those little things that we can start to cater towards and adjust outside of the game.
Right. Yeah. Youth is, I mean, I think it's even more prevalent than traditional sports as far as esports are concerned. You see a lot more young athletes. And this kind of corresponds with actually our brains being especially fluid, and we call it plastic in the science world. Your brain is is just great at doing a lot of stuff when you're relatively young. And because of that, you know, the esports is a sport that lies predominantly in the mental realm, right? And so anyway, talking about that, you are seeing a huge youth population in esports. And one thing that's interesting to me is that in traditional sports, scouts are constantly looking for the best of the best. They're looking for the cream of the crop. And when you have someone who's scouting out in traditional sports, they'll actually go and they'll watch you play and so on. The esports scouts, those are a little bit more, I wouldn't say the system has the infrastructure and the systems around it hasn't been fleshed out as much as in traditional sports. And typically it's, I mean, you can probably speak better to this than me, but typically it's just like, you know, okay, we're looking at the top of the rank ladder, or I know a guy, or I've played him and he's really good. Let's do some tryouts, something like that. Yeah. It's not really like a scout's coming and just like observing you for, you know, a few games, a few key games. But I do know that. Yeah. Is that accurate at least, or I don't know.
Pretty much from what I've heard. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So with some of the teams that I've worked with, they like to also make sure that the people that they bring into the team, they have a lot of other skills outside of just that. So what I mean by just the esports is like, you have to have a good attitude. You have to be like a team player. You have to take, you know, training seriously. You can't be a total asshole and make it. I mean, sometimes you can, but, you know, you have to actually have some of these soft skills as well. And from what I've talked to from, you know, coaches and managers and things is they like to see someone who has some of these intangibles already dialed in. So someone who is going to take their exercise seriously, someone who's going to take their health seriously, someone who's going to take their sleep seriously, their nutrition seriously. It's one less thing that you have to train. And so starting earlier on some of these intangibles, I think is really important. If you're looking at competitiveness, esports is five times as difficult to become a professional esports athlete as it is to become a professional professional athlete. And with competition, that's that steep, like literally any edge you can gain is important, even if it's just like 0.1%. You know, you're gonna see so much return on your time and efforts. If you take some of these other things seriously, you're going to make your body better. And because of that, you're going to make your brain better as well. I mean, how many times is, you know, someone at like one HP and, you know, there's a clutch play, right? Imagine if they were just like slightly worse and then suddenly that clutch play is now just a awkward fail. And, you know, these clutch plays happen around differences of like a millisecond or two. And the brain, if you can boost someone's reaction speed or hand-eye coordination or what have you better, that stuff is going to determine, you know, those clutch plays and those things that we really remember. But starting young, it's going to help you get scouted. It's going to help you develop your brain. It's going to make you have longevity in the sport. And it's going to have a lot of trickle-down effects for the rest of your life, I believe.
Yeah, for sure. I love the way you've put that in terms of the clutch position, because you see it quite a lot in esports. It comes down to the line quite a few times. So being able to, I guess, have that emotional regulation in that kind of scene and in that situation to be able to perform and be able to, you know, understand the situation, what's going on, is crucial and is essential to win. And I guess, you know, just touching on what you said, spoke about, just previously touched on, you know, dialing in the fundamentals, I guess if we can get these, I guess, upcoming youth athletes to start to dial in sleep, nutrition, exercise early and earlier, then it's just going to be so much more easier. And when does it become the normative? You know, when does that become the norm that every esports athlete is doing this? And if every esports athlete is starting to do that, well, that means that everyone else is going to get on board with that because they want to be in that competitive scene. You know what I mean? So I guess, you know, how long do you think it will be before we start to see that regulation in regards to, you know, in order to get into esports, you need to be doing this, 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 and this? Because, you know, we have something similar in traditional sports, right? So, you know, do you think that's pretty far off, or do you think it's just around the corner?
Being honest, I think it's pretty far. And the reason I think it is because what I've seen happen in the esports world is happening like a step behind what's happening in traditional sports. And in the traditional sports world, we're only just now getting appreciation for some of these side support staff people. And what I mean by that is things like your, you know, sports psychologist, your nutrition person, your sleep psychologist, like all these people, these fringe support staff. Traditionally, who handled that was the strength coach. The strength coach did everything. And every single team, every single sport that you can think of, they all have strength coaches, and everybody sees the importance between, you know, working out and whatever their sport is. But very few teams are also taking these other things more serious. Now, it is growing, right? The NFL used to only have, well, no dietitians, but in the last 10 years now, it's like almost half, and the other half are getting contract dietitians, for example. Yeah. NBA is kind of in a similar boat. So you're seeing this as being more and more emphasized throughout traditional sports. And as far as esports is going, what I'm seeing is it's kind of like what traditional sports is doing. Everything just falls on the strength coach. Maybe you bring in a sleep person every once in a while to come talk to your team. Maybe you bring in a sports psychologist every once in a while to come talk to your team. But you don't have someone on staff who's just kind of waiting around to do that or to optimize that every single day. So I do think it's a while away. And I think, though, that you can see the results from the teams who do take it seriously. There was, man, I'm going to shoot myself in the foot here, but like there was a team, I was watching a league championship like probably like half a year ago, and there was this European team that was killing it. And they had a guy who was helping out with like their nutrition and their strength and their like physical therapy and all this stuff. And they were just dominating. And they attributed a lot of it to just all of this extra stuff that they were doing, taking care of their body and taking care of their mind. And not necessarily their, you know, oh, let's watch another 10 hours of VOD reviews or whatever. It was more on these intangibles that they were, that they were attributing it to. So you're seeing it. I think realistically what you're going to see right now for the next few years is there's probably some like a catch-all person on staff who is going to be just like, okay, you're going to be the health and wellness guy for the team. And then maybe we'll bring in some of these other people to come give us a little bit of extra information to help us out. And that being said though, I do know, there are some teams who I do know who bring in to their gaming houses, like a performance chef, and they're not technically a dietitian or a real nutrition person, but they have a chef who's making them relatively healthy meals, you know, and they taste good. So it's probably better than what they would be doing if they were left to their own, but it's not like optimal as far as peak performance. So I've seen that is something that seems to be more common, and that's something the NBA does in basketball. So I know that that's seems like it's probably that's close. And then it's the true support staff is going to be a little bit farther away, if I had to guess.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree. I definitely think that in regards to here in the OCE scene in Australia, definitely that kind of scene and that kind of vision for external allied health professionals, you know, your sleep psychs, your nutritionists, your strength conditioning coaches, you know, all those guys is probably a little bit behind you guys over there, the NA and the EU scene, just because I guess the biggest thing that comes down to it at the end of the day is resources, right? What teams have the ability to invest into these external guys to come on board and help them with the team. Now, they've already got to, you know, pretty much be concerned with the coaches and the player coaches and all those kind of people involved within the organization. And then it's just a matter of resources to bring on the extra guy. So I definitely think that, as you said, I definitely agree. It'll take probably a couple of years from here on outwards. But at least the best thing is that recognition is there, right? Recognition towards the scene, recognition for potential to growth, and we're acknowledging the scene in a positive way. So I think that's definitely beneficial for everyone involved.
Can I say one thing about what you just said?
Sure.
It was really interesting. Something that I'm seeing that is happening with esports, the funding, absolutely, the access to resources, you guys are in a very tight spot, right? And I think that really causes a lot of these spin-off issues that I'm going to mention in a second. But you don't have a lot of money, and so you're kind of grasping for sponsorship deals normally. Unless you're like really, really top of the top, you start grasping for these sponsorship deals and or donations, right? A lot of teams are just held together by donations and you know, at least as far as like college teams are concerned, it's like entirely donor funded. They're not positive revenue streams. So they're looking for donations, they're looking for sponsorship deals, and that's how they kind of get along. And that's tough because what I tend to see is that a lot of players are kind of forced into selling out a little bit, where you know, they might have to endorse a product that they don't necessarily believe in, because otherwise their team is literally going to be non-existent. And that's a really tough situation to be put in. But the point I want to make as far as nutrition is concerned is, I know a lot of teams who are essentially forced, because they have no money, to take some of these supplement deals with different companies. You know, you see, and I'm not going to name names with any supplement companies or anything, but I have seen a lot of teams, they'll take supplement deals just because they need the money, they need the sponsorship. And then half the time, you know, like at tournaments and stuff, I know people who will have the can out, but they'll pour it, like they'll empty it out and they'll like fill it with water, or they'll put whatever their favorite beverage is in, and they're not even drinking whatever the supplement is. And so like, I see that kind of stuff all the time. And it's like, it's kind of a sad situation, because you guys are strong armed into just trying to like duct tape together this like infrastructure. And I think until it starts gaining a lot more, I mean, it's already got a huge traction. I just don't understand why. I feel like part of the problem is there's a lot of different games, but monetization seems to be an issue. And I think we're running into issues with the publishers and developers controlling tournaments and all this kind of thing. Like there's a lot more legalese around owning League of Legends versus like no one owns the sport of football. Like you can just, anyone can play football, but League can decide, I don't want you guys to be playing this tournament, sorry, we're done. So there's a lot more regulations around esports, which is also causing a hiccup.
Yeah, for sure. I can definitely, now that you speak about it, and you speak about, I guess, that grasping for sponsorship deals, it's quite evident in quite a few situations, especially maybe in regards to that marketing on YouTube or Twitch, you know, throughout tournaments. And, you know, yeah, is it really what the scene needs? You know, all these external, I guess, supplements entering the scene, you know, people who might not have scientifically researched their formulas, you know, what kind of impact is that having? So how do you feel personally about that? You know, do you feel that it's not beneficial towards the scene, then, you know, it's doing more harm than good for some of these players?
Yeah, I could probably talk like 4 hours about just this topic alone, but I do think that part of the so when I speak with my fellow nutrition professionals, the people who, you know, they're dietitians, they're sports dietitians, they're like the best of the best of what they do for you know, these traditional sports, they all, like almost unanimously, they say esports doesn't need nutrition, or esports doesn't want nutrition. And this goes hand in hand with, so you have that, like the nutrition professionals like are just kind of ignoring the scene, which already sucks, right? Because now you don't have real evidence-based information that's there. And then the consumer, the esports athletes, what they have is they have these sponsorship companies who are coming in. And so there's a lot of these supplement companies who essentially have just come in to fill the gap. And they're like, okay, well, the nutrition professionals aren't here, so we're going to swoop in. They come in and now they flood the market with all this information. You know, so many companies are starting, you know, energy drink beverages and all sorts of things trying to market to these players. And I think it's honestly hurting them, because a lot of times the nutrition message around that is something like, you don't need to take your nutrition seriously, you don't need to take your training seriously, you don't even need to sleep, just drink this one energy drink and all of a sudden everything's going to be good. You'll be best of the best. And that's kind of how the marketing goes. And, you know, on face value, the players themselves don't, I believe that they don't actually think a lot of that stuff is true, you know, that they're literally going to turn from, you know, the worst player to, you know, number one on the ladder. But some of that seeps in. And the culture around esports now is just built on a lot of bad information. And I think the information that is coming in, because it's just the wild, wild west, it's making it worse off. And that kind of depresses me a little bit, because I really do love the gaming community. And I feel like, you know, it's given me so much personal happiness and joy and things like that, and sanity. And to see that nowadays compared to, you know, 5-10 years ago, it's like, it's kind of like when your favorite spot becomes like a tourist trap, and it's like, it turns from being like a cool thing to now it's like, okay, now there's just all these weird sponsorships and like, you know, let me push this, let me push that. And anyway, I think it's hurting the players, and I don't think it's doing the sport of, you know, esports, I don't think it's doing the sport itself any justice, because it's setting it back from some of the people who, you know, are trying to look at it and are trying to take it more seriously. So I think there's a lot of
for sure.
Yeah, I think it's a problem.
Yeah. And just touching on the players there, I guess one of the biggest things is that these guys may not have the knowledge. You know, they might have the knowledge of the scene, what's good, what's not, especially if they don't have people like yourself involved with them, or, you know, other people, you know, sports psychologists or external nutritionists or dietitians with them, helping them along that way. They might just have that coach in the background who's trying to push them into, you know, one kind of route, and that route may not be the best. And I guess there's a vulnerability there, right? Because a lot of these players have the mindset that I've got to where I am now because of what I've done. So, you know, one little small change, one little tiny thing, it's not going to make the biggest impact. Or I've got to where I've done because, you know, who I am and what I've done, but, you know, nothing else is going to change. So I guess when you introduce this adoption of these external things, it has that kind of foreplay in regards to, is this really going to help? Oh, you know, maybe it will, maybe it won't. I'll just try it out. And that's where I guess you can kind of lead into maybe, you know, addiction, all those kind of, you know, far-fledged kind of long things. But it's definitely interesting in regards to that. And I definitely think it's a scene that's there's a lot of controversy within the scene. I'm sure you're well aware. So it's definitely one of those things that it's interesting to look at from an external perspective in regards to my approach.
Yeah. And one thing that you see, and this is a battle in traditional sports as well with their athletes, where I've got to where I am now because of what I did. I was doing me. So why should I listen to you? Right? Like I'm hot stuff, and, you know, 100%. Let me just keep doing this and I'm going to keep being hot stuff. And there's nothing I can do that you can teach me, basically. This idea that you can't be taught. Yeah. And first off, that in itself is like a logical fallacy, right? Just because you got where you are, it doesn't mean that you couldn't have got there faster, or like the fact that it doesn't mean that you got there in the straightest way possible, or that you wouldn't have been better if you did something different, right? You're just where you are, and that's all you know. You don't know if that was the absolute optimal thing that you could have done. And as far as nutrition goes, like, you're succeeding despite your diet and not because of it. And the easiest way to motivate, you know, traditional sports and esports that I have found, is simply find some metric that they care about and measure it, because that's how you're going to show them. Because it's really apparent in other fields that there's a link between what they're doing and the performance, right? So like, if you're a track athlete and you go do some squats, it's like, okay, I'm working my legs out. I know that my legs are what I use to run. Therefore, the squat is going to help me be a better track athlete. If you are, you know, like a competitive esports athlete, and you are practicing, you know, I keep jumping back to league, but like, if you're practicing like your shooting accuracy or something in like a first person shooter, you see the link between that and what you're doing, because you have to be able to make shots and you have to be able to, you know, be accurate with it. But
yeah,
there's no real link between the broccoli that I ate yesterday and my performance today, right? Like, they're not going to see the link. And so that makes it really hard for the nutrition side to get buy-in from them. But the easy fix, like I said, is to find a metric they care about and measure it. And I typically take a much more scientific approach than a lot of my colleagues. A lot of nutrition professionals, they run off like anecdote and experience, but me with my research background, I'm like super analytical about it, which is a plus sometimes. Also, sometimes it's a minus. So you find a metric that they care about, and what you do is you just try out something new with nutrition. So it's like, okay, I'm going to have you take your hydration seriously, right? For 1 week. Just take your hydration seriously for 1 week. That's all I'm asking you to do. Drink this amount of ounces per day that I told you about. And literally, like, you don't actually feel any different, but I measured your accuracy. I measured your, you know, whatever metric it was. And I showed that was improved over this week, right? So now all of a sudden they're like, oh, dang, maybe it does help. So if you can show that link to their performance, that's how you get buy-in with nutrition. Because I can talk all day long about how, you know, eating your broccoli is going to prevent heart disease like 50 years from now, but no one cares about that, right? They're like, how is this going to help me out right now? And for me, I don't care about feelings. I don't care about feelings at all. I care about results. If you're trying to be elite, then you need to start thinking that way as an esports athlete. Like, and if I measurably show that I can improve your performance by even 0.1%, then you should be like all over it. If that's really your elite mindset and you're trying to get better. But the people who are going to get filtered out is, you know, the people who think they're the best, they can't be taught, and that they have no more room to grow. Those are the people who are going to get left behind. So anyway, measure what you want to go after and then try different things, because you'll find stuff that do help and you'll find stuff that don't help.
Yeah, for sure. Completely agree. I love that kind of message you're driving through there in regards to, you know, the elite is at the elite for a reason, you know. So they need to, in order to be there and withstand it, you see in esports all the time, those that are really well, but then don't take care of, you know, maybe their physical health, maybe in regards to hand stretches, they start to get wrist joints, they start to get injuries because they're not addressing the external domains that's accounting towards their in-game performance. And I do it with my team as well. So, you know, we have pre-game warm-up in regards to hand stretches, we have cooldowns, and I'm just making sure that, you know, they're feeling pretty good in regards to all that kind of stuff. And I guess that's one of the metrics I like to address as well. I completely agree. It's the way you've put it is such a fantastic approach. So I really appreciate you explaining it like that. I think it's for our listeners especially, it really sums it up really nicely how you've put it. In regards to, I guess, let's get into caffeine because I think that's the big one. And okay. I think that's the one you're most interested about.
Sure. Real quick before caffeine, though, I just want to briefly say that, like, it truly like breaks my heart when I see esports players who are retiring at like 22, 23 years old, yeah. Just because, you know, their wrists aren't holding up, their shoulders aren't holding up, they have type 2 diabetes, like all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like that's just really sad to me. And if they had just taken some of this stuff more seriously, they would have had an extra 10 years, you know, playing at their sport that they supposedly say is everything that they care about. So anyway, sorry, I just had to briefly say that. But yeah, we can talk about caffeine.
No, that's right. I 100% agree because, you know, you see it all the time and you see some of the big pros, especially I think the one that comes to mind is Yuzi from China, yep. who had to retire his career. I think he was 23 or something. And the doctor said that he had the arms of a 40-year-old or something. It's incredible. And I think, you know, what needs to happen, do you think, in regards to recognition for the scene? Do you think that, you know, more injuries need to happen for people to really start to realize, hey, this is serious, we need to start addressing these things? What needs to be the sliding shift? What needs to be the earthquake that moves the bricks?
I think on like a global level, it's not going to happen unless more people start getting injured. And that's what you see in football right now. Is everybody's known football is like causing concussions and is like making people die young and get Alzheimer's and all that kind of stuff. But no one wants to talk about it until more and more people start, you know, that Alzheimer's count like started getting higher, higher, higher. And then all of a sudden it started getting media attention. And then all of a sudden now the viewers, they care. And then the viewers started caring. They start putting pushes on the NFL to start changing their regulations, get better helmets, all this and that kind of stuff. So I mean, it's kind of depressing to say, but I don't think the population is going to care until a certain amount of people have been injured and, you know, it becomes like a thing. Mm. But as far as individual team goes, I think that culture is probably the number one most important thing that's going to predict whether or not it's your team is successful or not. And you need a team and you need from the top all the way down to the bottom. Like you need a cohesive culture that just says, you know, we support you being healthy, you having longevity in this sport. And also, you know, a culture of being elite. And the two are the same. Honestly, it's like if you want to be elite, you need to be healthy. You can't be on the team if you're retiring at 22 because your hands give out, you know? So I think the culture from the top down, the managers have to support it, the strength coach, you know, the fact that you can do those kind of things with your team is amazing because not every team has that, you know, and that shows that your team does care. And so if these teams start bringing in more professionals that say, we care about your health, you know, like here's just a regular psychologist. Like I care about your mental health, which is a big deal these days, right? You know, like offering those kind of services to the player saying like, I care about you as a person and I want you to be healthy. I think that at a team level, there's a lot of power that can be had and a lot of benefit that can be gained by the team.
Yeah.
But that's again, comes down to an issue of resources.
Yeah, I think it always comes down to resources. It's just a waterfall, and resources is at the bottom, I feel. It's just one of those things that boxes have to be ticked at the end of the day, and if you don't have those boxes to tick or the money to tick the boxes, then I guess you go without. So it's sad to see, but I guess it's going to do, you know, as esports is pretty much, I wouldn't say in its infancy, I'd probably say a couple years old, but, you know, probably in 5-10 years, it might be the normative that every single team, it's mandatory to have these professionals in order to compete or in order to enter this tournament, just so that we are accounting for the player's health.
Yeah, and I think that that's what you see at a lot of organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a sad point, actually, but this is what you see is that a lot of organizations, they will hire on staff certain support people to check a box and be like, this limits our liability because we have a psychologist on staff. So, you know, we're doing our part to ensure their mental health. Now, that being said, it is a box to check, but at the same time, the services of that person, if you hired the right person, are invaluable. So I think it would be, I think it'd be great. I think it's a lofty goal. I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but it'd be great if, you know, the tournament organizers and those kind of things, they said like, you know, we're not going to allow you to compete unless, you know, you're actually being healthy or something of that sort. We saw a little bit of that kind of regulation with the NBA where they were really looking out for the best interest of the players. Back in the day, they used to recruit straight out of high school. And then they realized that all the people who were getting recruited to the NBA, they were blowing all their money, getting in debt, and completely bankrupt and like, you know, like screwed. And there was a lot of divorces, a lot of suicides, a lot of like really bad stuff that was happening to these NBA players.
Yeah.
And so what they did was they changed the regulations and they said, now you have to go to 1 year of college at minimum before you can compete in the pro level.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that was a regulation that was added to protect the players themselves. And I think that kind of thing should definitely be implemented on the esports side where you, if you implement some kind of regulation to protect the players, I think right now they need it.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what that protection is, what that barrier, what that shield will be developed into. So it's all exciting. I just can't wait to see what happens in regards to the scene. Yeah.
Same here. caffeine, right? what do you want to know about caffeine? Because I've given lectures on this.
let's break it down. I'm sure we've got a lot of players who have messaged me about this, just, you know, wanting to know all about caffeine. I've had a parent that's been interested whether their son should start to be, you know, looking in regards to supplementation in terms of dosages. So I think let's start from the top and then we can start to niddle our way through. So in regards to caffeine, why is it good for esports athletes and why should we be considering it?
Okay. So I'm going to take it one farther step back just so that way my answer makes sense.
Let's do it. Just
like how caffeine actually works, like it's a mechanism. So
let's do it.
Yeah. So caffeine is the single most widely used psychoactive compound in the world. Okay. It is one of the most well-researched compounds. And this is simply because coffee and tea exist and everybody's chugging that literally across the globe.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of research behind it. Now, life involves action. And at any given time, every cell in your body is just undergoing this massive like symphony of processes that allow you to exist. And every single action that your body undergoes requires a cost. Okay. No action is possible without the use of some energy. And we get all of our energy from food. Okay. We convert this food into this universal energy currency, which is called ATP or adenosine triphosphate. I want you to remember that adenosine because that's important later.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to breathe, you have to pay ATPs. If you want to think, ATPs have to be paid. You want to lift weights, ATPs have to be paid. So you get the idea. But all your food gets converted into ATP. So the body is really smart, actually. So we don't have 100 different currencies. We just have this one ATP to pay for everything. If we had to convert between different currencies, that'd require all this extra effort and time. And human life, as we know it, would literally be impossible. And pretty much any life, because we've found that all organisms rely on this ATP. Now, changing topics just very slightly, there's a concept called sleep pressure, which means exactly what you think it does, which is simply the longer you go without sleep, the more sleep pressure there is. It just builds up until you sleep and then it resets. And so the mechanism behind sleep pressure is a buildup of adenosine molecules, which hopefully sounds familiar. Adenosine triphosphate was our ATPs. So essentially, as you use energy throughout the day, or as you're burning these ATPs, these adenosine molecules accumulate in the brain. And so your body senses this buildup of adenosine and it interprets it as sleep pressure. And the more adenosine that you have built up, the more sleepy that you feel. And so why am I telling you all this? caffeine is an adenosine antagonist, which what that means is it blocks your receptors from noticing that there is an adenosine buildup. So it's kind of like a little screen that covers up the sensors. The adenosine is still there, mm-hmm. but you can't feel the effects anymore. Okay. And so as a result, your body becomes more alert and awake. And the other thing you should know is that caffeine doesn't work for everybody. There is a little bit of a genetic component mm-hmm. as well. So some people will see the benefits to caffeine. Some people will see no changes and some people are actually going to get worse. And in that unfortunate group who, you know, can't rely on caffeine in the mornings to help get them ready to go, they tend to get a lot more anxious and jittery. And the people who are in this genetic group, they tend to know it. They tend to be our naturally non-coffee drinkers or non-tea drinkers, okay? But one thing that I will say about this is if the dose gets high enough, then literally anybody is going to experience these side effects. If I give you a big enough dose, you will get jittery, you will get nervous, you will get anxious, regardless of genetic predisposition. So, yeah. Okay, speaking about that, and then just one more kind of preamble about caffeine, I suppose, is that the military does routinely use caffeine in sleep-deprived individuals to enhance their vigilance, enhance their alertness, and enhance their mood. And this is something that they've been doing for a really long time. All the research that's come out in the last, you know, like 50 years just shows consistently that caffeine can restore some measure of performance in sleep-deprived individuals. Okay. But this is this is the key point that I want to really get across, is that the restoration is never complete. Okay. And so what that means is that getting adequate sleep is far superior to taking caffeine. Okay. So you need to first be checking the box that, hey, I'm actually putting in the effort to sleep at a reasonable time consistently, and I'm getting enough quality and quantity of that sleep. And that is going to do a world more for you than any caffeine supplement ever can. So that being said, we assume we have somebody who is sleeping, enough quantity, enough quality, consistent time every day, all that kind of stuff. We assume someone is checking mm-hmm. all those boxes. In that instance, would I still recommend caffeine for esports athletes? And the answer is yes. but I wouldn't recommend it if they had other bad habits. And that's because I need you to show me that you have your fundamentals taken care of before you resort to these like quick fix mm-hmm. kind of things. So if you can't show me in good faith that you're checking all these other boxes, your stress, your hydration, your nutrition, your training, you know, like you're doing your stretches for your hands and all that kind of stuff. If you can't prove to me that you can do that, then you don't deserve a caffeine supplement, because your performance, no supplement whatsoever, even caffeine, can overcome a detriment caused by a problem in one of those fundamental areas. So you have to check all the fundamentals mm-hmm. first, and then you can take a look at your supplements. That's the only time I'm going to even talk to you about supplements. I'm going to be like, hey, when did you eat your vegetables last? How much water did you have today? If you can't answer those questions for me, then I'm sorry, I'm not even going to answer your caffeine question, because that's ridiculous. Like, you need to get your basics covered in first. So, okay. So we're going to assume that yep. the people who are listening though have checked all those basics and all that stuff. and so now the yep. question becomes, what does caffeine do for the brain in people who are well hydrated, sleeping enough, exercising regularly, taking their nutrition seriously, all that kind of stuff. And what you see is that caffeine will improve things like reaction speed or reaction time. It's going to reduce your fatigue, which mm-hmm. has the added benefit in workouts, and is probably one of the main reasons why it actually works in pre-workout formulas, is because it makes you feel the pain of the exercise less strongly. So your body will, or your yep. brain will, let you push yourself harder. So you're probably familiar with the RPE scale, but basically it'll take the same exercise from yep. like a 7 down to like a 5.5 or something like that. And so now all of a sudden it's like, well, I'm going to push myself harder just to get back up to that 7 that you had me training at. So caffeine lets you train harder than you otherwise would have done. It also does some cool stuff like improve spatial memory. It improves perceptual memory. It also improves your ability in tasks that require limited working memory. So not a lot of working memory, a little bit. And it also helps in learning tasks that are presented passively, okay, not actively. So if you are doing a task that heavily depends on working memory, and beforehand I mentioned limited, caffeine doesn't do anything. So if you, it's kind of like if I read a list of items to be picked up at the grocery store to you, and then I asked you to say it back to me, that's kind of like working memory. It's like trying to work through stuff in my brain right now. And so if that's all you're doing, caffeine isn't going to help. If you're trying to intentionally learn something, so if you're sitting down to study for an exam tomorrow, if you're trying to like really dive deep into one particular topic, caffeine is not going to help you learn that any better. It has no effect on long-term memory formation, and it has no effect on visual acuity. It has no effect on hand-eye coordination. And a lot of people will make claims that a lot of these beverages do help out those kind of things, and that caffeine will help out those things, but it does not. So the main things that it does, like I said, was improve reaction time, reduce fatigue. It does improve spatial memory, which is really good for FPSs and games with maps where you have to know where things are. So like if you have to like remember that you saw a player running one way and you're like trying to figure out and you can guess where they're going to be, that kind of stuff. Spatial memory, so it can help out with those. And perceptual memory as well. So those are where it helps. I do believe that it can help out a lot of esports athletes when used acutely and only after the fundamentals are taken care of. And I can talk about like dosing and all that kind of stuff if you're curious.
Yeah, for sure. I guess I completely agree in regards to addressing the fundamentals. I mean, you see a lot of players wanting to, I guess, as you mentioned, take the quick fix, get involved and see what can work immediately. But, you know, I definitely agree that in order to, I guess, be open to those quick fixes and be open to, I guess, looking towards supplementation, you've got to address your sleep, you've got to address nutrition, exercise, and making sure that you're ticking those boxes, essentially. So I completely agree with you. And that's exactly what I've been doing with my team, just making sure, because we're looking to, you know, start to trial caffeine for some of my players. And exactly the same thing, I wanted to make sure that we're not relying on caffeine to, I guess, be that thing to, I guess, promote our performance instead of getting a good night's sleep, instead of doing a little exercise, instead of doing a hand stretch, instead of taking a walk in the morning, instead of doing, you know, little key fundamentals in regards to an esports career. And then that's when you can start to consider caffeine. So let's say, for example, let's do a bit of a role play. Say, for example, I approached you and I'm looking to start a trial caffeine. I've taken it, you know, a couple of cups of coffee here and there previously, but I haven't really used it in regards to strategically, you know, using it for esports and for a game or for a tournament, for example. So what would be the first steps in order to try and understand when I should start to take caffeine, how much caffeine I need? What would be my go-to? Where would I start?
Yeah. So first off, you need to make sure that you're testing this at an appropriate time. Okay. You do not want to test a supplement literally like day of the championship. Okay. That's the dumbest thing you could possibly do. Because if you have a reaction to it, then all of a sudden you're out. Like that's literally, I've seen a lot of careers lost that way in traditional sports, is trying out something right before the big day. So you need to test this stuff out in low risk and, you know, settings where it's safe and it's okay to potentially have bad performance. Okay. So it has to be a safe environment. So that's the first thing. The second thing would be finding out what their previous history with caffeine is. So you mentioned they've had coffee or tea before, but you really need to dive a little bit deep into that, because if you ask them, you know, hey, what was your reaction with drinking coffee? Some people will say like, you know, I had it and I was anxious all day. It ruined my sleep and I felt like trash and I actually had to run to the bathroom right after I took it. It's like, okay, well, that's important information for me to know because now I'm not going to recommend caffeine to you. Okay, so we're done, right? so getting a little bit of information about what their prior use of caffeine looks like, seeing how their body reacts to it, what their impressions of it are. Like if they say, oh man, I feel like a rock star every time I take it, it's like, okay, yeah, let's take another step here. Let's probe this a little bit more. So that's the first step, is just a history of their caffeine use. And then obviously, you know, if you have doctors or anything like that, you should also definitely check to make sure that they don't have any contraindications that would preclude them from using caffeine, right? If they have some heart conditions or something like that. So assuming all that stuff, you check the boxes there and you say, okay, so we've talked about it. This is something you've used. You felt like it's helped in the past, but you're looking to get a little bit more detailed protocol for you. So then it's going to depend on whether or not they're a habitual caffeine user or whether this is just like a one-off every now and again. Because if they're a habitual caffeine user, then you actually become desensitized to the effects. So your dose is going to be very different if you're someone who's drinking 10 cups of coffee a day than if you're someone who's drinking no cups of coffee and just having, you know, like a latte once a week or something like that. So that's going to give you a good baseline judgment for what your dose should be in order to be effective. But regardless of that, the appropriate move is to start with a lower dose, measure if it actually helps. And if it does, cool. If it doesn't, then you can slowly taper up your dose. And so where I would start is honestly probably 50 milligrams, because that's a low dose. That's equivalent of about a cup of tea. And some people will report benefits with that. Some people, that's going to be too low. I think if you're really trying to be systematic with it, that's what you should do. You should test out and measure the effects of whatever metric it is. So if your metric is, I want to see reaction speed, and you have like a reaction speed test, do that before and after caffeine use, right? And then do it for every single one of your doses. And what you're going to see is a little bell curve. You're going to see that performance is going to slowly improve, and then it's going to slowly decrease. And so then that's going to tell you this is your optimal performance dose for this metric. And so you have to really be smart about what metric you pick, though, because you want one that transfers over to your particular sport. So what's important for, you know, like a Call of Duty person is going to be different for a Smash player, which is going to be different than like a League of Legends player. So within sports, the metric that is important is going to change. But find one that's important, measure your performance, start out in 50 milligram increments. If there's someone who is a habitual user, you could probably start them out at 100. And the military, what they do is they start with 100 milligram dose and they dose in increments of 100. So they'll do like 100 milligram, or they'll do 200, 300, 400, that kind of thing. You should not exceed 600 milligrams. 600 is overkill. Do not do it. I would recommend probably going no higher than 400, because above that, you just start kind of run, unless they're like 8 feet tall and like massive, then maybe you can start with a higher dose. But for most of us normal people, 400 is going to be probably your ceiling for an effective acute dose. And so what I mean by acute is I take it a single time, and this is for some performance that I care about within 30 minutes or so. So performance benefits are only going to last for, if you're lucky, up to 4 hours. And that's because the half-life of caffeine is like 3 to 4 hours. So at about that 3 to 4 hour marker, your performance increases are going to start coming back down. So if you have some measure, some game, right, and it's like, okay, this competition is going to take 3 hours, 3-4 hours, you're fine. You only have to take that one single dose and you're good to go. But the story becomes different if you're trying to use caffeine to sustain performance over like a full day or multiple days of consecutive competitions. That's going to be a little bit awkward. But for a single performance that you really care about, I would say it's probably going to be between 100 and 400 milligrams is going to be your optimal dose. And you want to take it about 30 to 60 minutes before that key task begins. And that's going to help you out for those singular occurrences. I think that's what I want to say about
fantastic.
That.
Fantastic. And how long should that trialing? That's all right. No, 100%. How long should that trialing period be when you start to, start to experiment with caffeine before a tournament? Say, for example, should I start trialing it 2 weeks before the big tournament, a week before, 3 weeks? How long should we have leverage on either side before that big main event that we want to try and dial into?
The sooner the better. And honestly, once you trial it once, you pretty much never have to trial it again, so long as your caffeine habits don't change, as far as caffeine is concerned. So like if, you know, you're like, oh, I did this back when I was in high school and you never drank caffeine, but now, you know, 5 years later, now you're someone who drinks 3 cups a day, you're going to have to retrial yourself because you've desensitized your caffeine level. So you're going to need to find out what your new you know, caffeine, minimum effective doses. But as far as how far away it should be, ideally you want it to be as far away as possible. So for traditional athletes, we say the off season is the time to manipulate body composition. The off season is the time to manipulate and experiment with all these supplements and all that kind of stuff. The main reason is because esports athletes tend to be superstitious, yes, but more so they like to be in the groove of things. And you can't do something like a week out that's just going to completely turn all their training on their head and just be like, whoa, this whole new thing that I'm adding into my protocol, like that's going to throw them off their game. So the farther the better, because once you get it dialed in, then it just becomes, this is what I do and this is my daily habit now. Okay. So maybe it's like throughout the week they're doing normal trainings, but on the weekends it's like, okay, we're doing our scrims on the weekends or whatever. Those are the days where I take my caffeine because those are my important days. And so that's when you do that higher dose. And it's just like, okay, every weekend from now until the big game day, like that's what I do. And they're going to be used to it by that time.
Fantastic. And I guess with that acclimation to caffeine, you know, that kind of once they start to get into it, is that when you start to, you know, when they're not really showing the effects, is that when you'd start to increase the dosage?
Yeah. So I'm kind of like a very safe guy. So I like to start small and have minor increments, which is why I said the 50 milligrams rather than the military's 100 milligram increments. I cut that in half.
Yeah.
But for people, you really will see, it's kind of interesting. You will see that like, oh, this metric actually peaked at 100 milligram dose for me, but this other metric peaked at 150 milligrams for me. And then you have to decide which one do I want, you know? So it's kind of interesting when you really start fine tuning it, and you'll notice some of those changes if you are measuring multiple metrics. But as far as how quickly should you do it, I would say at least a few times. Like if you can test this out, like at least 2 or 3 days, just to really make sure that they aren't having any kind of GI issues, no allergic reactions. They're actually seeing what they should be seeing. You have to keep all the other variables consistent, because a one-off is not enough to prove that this dose was best for you. It could just be you got amazing sleep last night. It could just be you're feeling amazing because, you know, your mom's standing behind you and you got to like show up and, you know, whatever. I don't know. So there's a lot of reasons why a single day is not a valid measure, and you need to repeat that at least once. I would say a couple times would be better, but like at least one time. So if you can, maybe 2 or 3 times you sample that same dose, make sure no reactions, make sure that they're getting pretty consistent results. And then you can say, okay, this is clearly inadequate. Let's bump it a little bit. Or you say, you know, I like to start seeing the bell curve come down. So I like to be like, okay, so we found the hump, but let's confirm that by the next highest one. And we start to see performance kind of coming back down a little bit. And then after that, you know, you never have to go to that higher amount.
Yeah, for sure. And at what stage throughout that process, I guess probably, you know, after we've found that we actually, you know, feel confident with caffeine and we like it in regards to performance, do we start to add in other things, you know, L-theanine, or experiment with some of those specific esports supplement stacks, for example? When does that kind of make its appearance?
Yeah, and that's interesting because there's all sorts of compounds that can boost brain performance. Honestly, there's a lot. There's a lot of specific foods that boost brain performance. There's a lot of specific exercise programs that boost brain performance. There's a lot of specific pharmaceutical compounds that boost brain performance. There's a lot of supplements that boost brain performance. And they each kind of have their own niche. So it really does depend on what you're looking for. And the thing that I'll say is the lowest hanging fruit is pretty much usually what you should always go for. So if caffeine is like well regarded as like it improves reaction speed, right? If your reaction speed is terrible, then caffeine is going to be the best supplement for you, right? But there are other supplements that do other things. And so like L-theanine, for example, is great when you are someone who has a very high propensity for stress. So if you're like a very anxious person naturally, L-theanine is kind of a calming down substance, and it's like a little bit of a downer. If you're someone who's very high stress and your reaction speed is already fine, then who cares about caffeine at that point? Let's go for the L-theanine, because the L-theanine is going to help you out and shows mental performance in these people who are very prone to being anxious and nervous and jittery and all that. So it really depends on what you're looking for, what your weak link is as an individual. And that's something that, you know, a lot of people miss out on, because a lot of people think like, oh, this supplement, it's got caffeine, so it's good for all esports players. It's like, no, that's total BS. Like, I could put 100 people on the same diet, 100 people on the same supplement. I'll be lucky if 10 or like 20 of those people respond exactly how I expect them to. The odds are it's probably not going to work exactly for you as it did for someone else. Like, that's just the nature of the beast, because everybody is their own unique individual with their own genetics, their own history, their own preferences, their own lifestyle, their own everything. So, you know, when I work with my athletes, I really pride myself on, this is a supplement, we've tested a bunch, this is the one that's going to work for you as an individual. This is not like some cookie cutter supplement that's just being marketed to all esports players, right? It's really hard for me to say when you should experiment or move on to the other ones. I would say it's going to depend on what you're looking for. I think they're all worthy of experimentation, at least all the safe and legal ones. I think they're all worthy of experimentation. But I bet, you know, if you go through the full gamut and let's say there's five supplements you want to test, I bet that, you know, every single player on your team is going to be on a different supplement that's like beneficial for them. And it could be that there are stacks of supplements that are better as well too, which makes it even more interesting. Is it's like, okay, maybe it's a caffeine plus L-theanine for you. Maybe it's an L-theanine plus creatine for that guy. Maybe it's an ashwagandha or whatever, like for that person. Yep. So like it's going to be different for every single person. And that is the challenge, but it's also a fun thing for me, at least on my end, when I work with people, because you can tease apart and see better results in different things for the particular person.
Yeah, you can mix and match and really find out what really works for that individual.
Yeah.
And just touching on ashwagandha, what's your opinion on it, and when should esports athletes be considering it?
I threw that out there, but I haven't seen, except in clinical cases, I haven't seen like where the esports athlete had. So ashwagandha is kind of like L-theanine, but more aggressive. It's very much like a relaxer. Okay. So it's going to really relax you. So if you're someone who truly has like diagnosed like panic attacks and anxiety and that kind of stuff, like you're truly on that spectrum of like borderline clinical or clinical on the anxiety nervousness side of things, I don't think ashwagandha is really going to be helpful for esports players. Maybe you can make a case for it that it might help some of them go to sleep, and if they're having poor sleep, but there are other ways to improve their sleep than, you know, immediately jumping the gun and going for ashwagandha. So for 9.99 out of 10 esports players, I don't think ashwagandha is going to be practically beneficial for mental performance.
Yeah, fantastic. Because I've had a couple of people that have asked me about it specifically, and obviously not knowing the research, it's definitely really good to hear your perspective on it and kind of gauge that kind of interest in that area that I'm not too familiar with.
So the other thing real quick that I'll say about ashwagandha is it's one of those compounds that's been used for like thousands of years. It's old school. And it has a lot of research behind it, and it has been shown to help out with a lot of other things. So there could be a reason for why an esports athlete might be taking ashwagandha that's unrelated to their esports performance. But when I'm talking about what I said before, it's specifically, do I think ashwagandha is a cognitive enhancer specifically in the metrics that esports players care about? And the answer is, I don't think so.
Yeah, fantastic. It's definitely interesting to see when we have so much, I guess, choose and pick in regards to our supplements. Once we're at that level, what really is going to come down to it, as you said, over the time, is that individualistic factor, and what works for someone may not work for someone else. Just quickly, I know it's not really supplemented related, but I had a viewer, I had a listener, not a viewer, I had a listener request that I just mention this, just because obviously I'm not going to name names, but previously they competed in the professional Call of Duty scene. And one of the things they used to take was Adderall. And they believed that Adderall made them just feel alive. They made them feel that, you know, as soon as they did that, their accuracy was unbelievable. It felt like they had wall hacks, for example. So what's your opinion on Adderall? I don't know if that's really something in your area or not.
Yeah, and this is really big, right? It's very popular in the esports world. It's kind of the dirty secret that no one likes to talk about. But so many players and so many teams are using Adderall, okay? And part of it, the reason why they're doing it is because they believe it's going to help, right? But the reason why they get away with it is because there's really no regulations, and there's not really a structured drug testing policy for esports like there is for traditional sports. A lot of esports players are experimenting and dabbling in a lot of these pharmaceutical compounds with the belief that it could help out their performance. Now, as far as what does the actual research say on if Adderall boosts specifically metrics important to esports performance? And well, before I say that, okay, so first off, if you are someone who truly has ADHD, right, or you're taking the Adderall or any of the other, you know, variants thereof for a clinical condition, and this is helping correct that clinical condition, then 100% it is going to help you out. 100%. No question about it. Okay. Yep. So if there's someone with ADHD, they need this medication, it's correcting, you know, this thing for them, 100% it's going to help you out. We have data showing that a lot of, you know, anecdotally, there is actual research data on this too, in the academic setting where people are taking Adderall and they're crushing it, right? They're able to burn through so much like homework. They got exams, they got lab reports, they got essays to write, they got all this stuff. And they're just like, they seemingly like they're just crushing it. They're just like getting through all this work. And, you know, it's a lot of like medical school students and a lot of like, you know, engineers and people who like advance past the bachelor's stage. They're like, man, I couldn't have got through it without the help of Adderall. So you have these anecdotal stories and, you know, the esports scene kind of picked up on this. They saw what was going on here. They say, okay, academics, that's mental. Let's experiment with this. Right. Or, you know, a lot of people who are students are also gamers. So they're like, I have experience with Adderall and it helped me over here. So maybe it's going to help me over here too. And so the question becomes, when you take Adderall, and it's like in a well-controlled situation, and you do not have ADHD, you're just a normal, healthy individual, and you take Adderall, what happens? You will see increased focus and increased ability to run through a bunch of tasks, and that can be useful under certain circumstances, like academics. But for esports performance, it's actually not doing really anything for your brain or for those metrics. So what it's doing is it's making you feel better. And I talked about feelings before. I really don't give to, you know, I don't care about your feelings. I care about results. Right. And so, I only care about results, and it's great. It makes you feel better. It makes you feel like it's doing awesome stuff. But when you actually measure the performance, it is no different between the people who are on the Adderall and the people who are not, which is kind of funny, because people are just so locked into their feelings. And this is a very similar situation was happening for NASCAR drivers back in the day, where they were taking cocaine just all the time. And they were like, this is the secret sauce. I feel like a god every time I was, you know, doing a couple lines right before I went on and drove. And but when you compare the cocaine users to the non-cocaine users, there's no difference in performance or win rates. And that exact same situation is happening right now in esports with a lot of these illicit drugs. And the only situation where I think it might help for esports is if, like, for whatever reason, your coach is just making you do like 20 hours of consecutive, you know, like boring, you know, like target practice or something, like really rote. Like if you're doing like a rote task and you just have to do a lot of it, it might help you get through it and sustain that performance. But it's not going to, caffeine's going to be doing way more and, you know, than the nothing that Adderall is doing for, you know, like a tournament scene or for like a scrim or for your practice sessions or things like that. So for esports performance, it's mostly just a feeling. And if you just want to feel good, like go watch your favorite TV show or walk outside or something. I don't know. So anyway.
Yeah, I like the way you put it there. Yeah, definitely. It's one of those things that I guess subjectively they feel like on top of the world, they feel like they're invincible, right? But then when we look to the research, it's one of those things where someone taking Adderall, but then someone not taking Adderall, there's not much of a difference. So
yeah, and the even in the academic setting, there's actually funny stories too, where like the person gets fixated on the wrong thing. So it's like they're like, oh shit, I have to like do all these homeworks and reports, and like I got a quiz tomorrow and all this kind of stuff. And they're like, all right, well I'm gonna pop an Addy because you know it's gonna help me get through it. And then you know, like the roommate comes home at like 3 a.m. and they're like, dude, what are you doing? Why are you like vacuuming the curtains? And it's like, cause they got like fixated on the wrong thing. So they got fixated on cleaning instead of doing the work. and so it's like, you know, sometimes even in the academic setting, it's not being as helpful as students like to believe it really is. Anyway.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Before we turn off the gas and start to roll down the hill, there's one last thing that I'd like to kind of get your idea and mindset about. Previously, I had on Robert Yip. So he was heavily invested in regards to the European League of Legends coaching scene as a sports psychologist. Now he's working over in Los Angeles. And one of the things he was really curious about implementing for esports athletes in that nutrition field is starting to look at intermittent fasting. And whether if we're starting to restrict that eating window, how much of a benefit is that going to have? Because I know that in regards to traditional sport and traditional athletes, a lot of these guys like to adopt it just because they feel, I guess feeling is one of those big things we see again, isn't it? They feel better. But in regards to research-wise, what's your opinion on it? And yeah, is it appropriate for esports athletes to consider this?
Yeah. And so this is probably going to be a little bit of a buzzkill. Sorry in advance. But again, I don't really care about feelings. I care about results. Like that's straight up all I care about. So it's really funny to me because I've been asked about intermittent fasting by so many esports athletes, and I couldn't figure out why. And I was getting asked about it like so much more than traditional sports athletes. And I was trying to trace back like where did this like for some reason esports players got it in their head that intermittent fasting was going to help them out. And so I started like digging around and like I traced it back to like this one article, I think, where they were, I'm not going to say what website I found it on, but it was like the top Google search. And I was like, is this where it all started from? I don't know. but it was just making these claims that intermittent fasting is one of the best diet strategies for esports players because it's going to boost their, well, in the article, they claim it's going to boost your BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And BDNF is awesome. That is true. Mm-hmm. And that because they were going to have more BDNF, it was going to have improvements in League of Legends performance. Or not League of Legends, sorry, esports performance. Right. And that link already is tenuous. Right. Like you can't just say like anytime you have to rely on a mechanistic argument to show that your supplement or whatever is or your protocol is helpful, I know you're full of it. And this is my test for supplements when, you know, I'm shopping is because like, if you have to say, for example, like, there's certain like BCAAs, for example, like they'll say, oh, this boosts, this has leucine in it and leucine boosts mTOR and mTOR is the signaling pathway, which signals for muscle growth. And when we have more muscle growth, you know, then we're going to see more actual muscle growth, right? Or more signal of the muscle growth equates to more actual muscle growth. And so that's like a lot of science and chemistry and all this and that, right? But if I really wanted to know, and I was a researcher, right? If I really wanted to know if BCAAs or whatever led to muscle growth, here's the study that I would have designed. I would have given people BCAAs and then I would have measured muscle growth. I wouldn't have like, you know, that's it. Like, that's all we care about. Like, did it actually cause you to grow muscles? Why are you trying to bring in all this like leucine and mTOR stuff? And the reason is because it doesn't cause muscle growth. And so they failed there. And so what they have to do is they have to take it a few steps back to see if it, if they can still make a sellable product off of, you know, the preliminary steps. And so they start making these logical leaps and all this and that. So if, The big test for you is if you see any marketing claim that relies on science that you don't really understand, it's probably BS. Because if the product really did what it claimed to do, then it would then it would claim it, right? So if a product says it helps you build muscle, like protein powder, for example, protein powder can put helps you build muscle because it helps you build muscle. It's that easy, right? But like all these other products, it's like, oh, it helps mTOR, it helps blah, blah, blah. Like no, it's you failed, and clearly your product is BS. Similarly, with intermittent fasting, if intermittent fasting helped esports performance, there would be a study that did intermittent fasting and then esports performance was way better, win rate or accuracy or whatever, right? That study is not out there. So let me just tell you right now, that study is not out there. Whether or not there's unpublished data and it failed or not, like, I don't actually know. But so that right there is like a logical problem that I see with this original article that I found that I seem to link it to. But here's so let me walk you through intermittent fasting. And just as a sidebar, I engage in a lot of different fasts myself for health reasons. And I can tell you about that on the back end. But so getting back to this, I'm not trying to hate on intermittent fasting by any means. But there is absolutely zero data in humans to suggest that intermittent fasting boosting brain performance or esports performance is legit. Okay. The only data that this is coming from, first off, is all rodent data. Literally zero studies in humans. Okay.
Right.
So that's problem one, right? Problem two, the rodent data that these people are citing. So it's like, okay, so we're going to cite the rodent data and then we're just going to assume that the rodents translates to human data, which already is a problem, but let's assume it does, right? So then when you look at the rodent data, when you actually go look at it, which most people don't actually do, but when you actually go look at the data, what you see is the fasting protocol they used is not intermittent fasting. Okay, so they weren't even using an intermittent fasting protocol, but then these people are like, oh, you know, fasting is the same thing as intermittent fasting, which is totally not true because there's a million different kinds of fasting. But they're like, oh, this fasting protocol, I'm going to just assume that it was intermittent fasting as humans normally do it. And so what the research was with those rodents was an alternate day fasting protocol, which means 24 hours of, you know, you can eat what you want in a normal day, and then you have 24 hours of fast. 24 hours eat, 24 hours fast, and so on.
Yep.
So that is a far cry away from the normal, like, you know, 16-8 intermittent fasting protocol that is most popular in culture, right? So that's link number two is like, okay, you only have rodent data, and the rodent data you do have is not even doing the intermittent fasting protocol that you're doing. So this link is kind of like falling apart, right?
And then
the third piece of it, which is, okay, so I have done extensive look into fasting, and fasting is like one of my favorite topics, so I could really talk about this a long time, but the shortest interval of fasting that I could find that was helpful to cognitive metrics in healthy humans. Okay, so the operative word is healthy, because I don't care if it helps someone with Alzheimer's, because you know, a lot of things are going to help out with them because their brain is messed up. But in a healthy human, the shortest fast window that I could find in the literature that could cause mental improvements was a 48-hour fast. So there was a study in a healthy human population, young males, they were all like recreational weightlifters, they were pretty fit. They did 48 hours of fasting, and this did cause improvements in both mental flexibility and reaction speed. All right. So that's kind of cool. Like, that result is kind of cool. Like, and I think there's something there, which is, you know, it's worthy of further investigation. But the problem is that protocol is impractical for us, because if you're looking for daily performance improvements, then that just means you just can never eat until you die, because you're going to be 48 hours for tomorrow, and then 48 hours for the day after, 48 hours of fasting for the day after. So you'll literally starve to death. The second reason is because normally for competitions, you don't want to do something drastically different from their day-to-day habits, because that has been shown to impair mental performance. So if you're someone who habitually eats breakfast and you suddenly skip breakfast, even just like breakfast, not let alone a 48-hour fast, but if you just skip breakfast on the day of competition, those athletes do far worse than if they had just eaten their breakfast like they normally do, because that's what their body is used to. So you can't do something like this to radically you know, try to improve the brain and the mental performance there. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is intermittent fasting for esports performance, there is no data to suggest that that helps. And the only data that you can find that is even tenuously linked requires a much longer fast than is actually practical to implement, you know, that 48 hours. So There might be reasons to do intermittent fasting that extend outside of esports performance. So for example, the only real case that I can make for intermittent fasting and esports performance, again, so this is a very tight subject, okay, because there are other reasons to do intermittent fasting, is if the esports athlete is particularly overweight or obese. Some people find intermittent fasting helps them lose weight. And going from, you know, morbid obesity to a healthy weight has been shown to improve cognitive faculties. So if intermittent fasting is a strategy that helped you get there, then okay, you can make a case for it, right? But it's not because of some magical trick that intermittent fasting did for your brain. It was more a byproduct of you losing weight, and you could have lost weight in a number of different ways. So those are my thoughts on intermittent fasting. There's no real data behind it for humans, and the rodent data is pretty terrible as well. So intermittent fasting got a lot of hype, mainly because it got popular with this one bodybuilder, and he kind of made it be a big thing. And then that became like an internet craze because there was like this bodybuilder and particularly like us who were on the internet, you know, we see it and we're like, oh, this new diet, so-and-so, whatever. But anyway, I could talk to you about meal timing, and circadian rhythms is like one of my favorite topics. And fasting is another thing that I really love, but specifically fasting for esports performance, I don't think it's a thing. And if anyone has any contrary data to that, that they would like to send my way, I'm more than happy to take a look at it. But I've looked through like hundreds of articles on this, and I can't find even a single link. So yeah.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's definitely not what I was thinking. Yeah, for sure. I definitely think that I've seen it definitely thrown around some of the groups that I'm in, you know, the phrase IF, or, you know, whether I should be trying, you know, to do IF. And it's definitely interesting that, you know, that main, you know, research is primarily in rodents, and, you know, in regards to humans, it's definitely going to be interesting to see whether people might be open to, you know, doing more research in the future, and, you know, if this is going to be is beneficial for esports athletes. Now, I feel like I'm just going to quickly play devil's advocate in the sense that, what about keto?
Yep. Okay, so keto is interesting. A lot of people will advocate keto for a lot of different reasons, and mainly keto got popular because, well, if you look over time, you see that, you know, like in the 90s, it was low fat, and then it was like low carb, and then you had the keto, and keto is just a recent iteration of the low carb diet. If you recall, I said the brain runs on a very specific fuel source. The brain, its primary fuel source, it has two fuels. Okay. Fuel one is ATP. All right. Which I mentioned everything uses, but fuel one is ATP. Fuel two is glucose, which is carbs. Carbs are the brain's preferred fuel source and the exclusive fuel source of the brain. And when I say exclusive, what I mean is if you did keto for 10 years, okay, you did it for 10 years and you're like, oh, I love keto. Keto is the best thing ever. My brain loves it. It's amazing. It's kind of like those photos with, or those videos where like the dog, like the owner makes him go vegetarian. And then like, it's like, oh, my dog loves it, would never eat meat. And then they put the meat next to the salad, and then the dog like walks right to the meat and eats it. Same thing with the brain. It's like, if you did keto for 10 years and then you suddenly have just like one little potato, the brain doesn't care. It's immediately going back for the carbs. Okay. So the carbs are what your brain really wants. And ketones are a backup energy. Okay. This is your backup generator. And so the surprising thing. So here's the surprising thing. And here's an actual point of favor for keto, is that I would hypothesize, based off of that information alone, that if you go on a ketogenic diet and I starve you of your brain's exclusive fuel source, that your brain would get much worse, right? But a point in keto's favor is that it seems to essentially have no effect on how well your brain is functioning. Acutely. Okay. We don't have like super long-term data on this, but acutely. And so that's definitely a point in the favor of keto, right? Is it's not hurting your brain more than I thought it would. But it really, you should listen to the fact that your brain really wants this stuff and you're now depriving it of it, right? But there are other downsides to going on a ketogenic diet, which is one, it ruins your high intensity physical activity. And as an esports athlete, you should be exercising. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're not exercising, then that's a bigger fundamental problem, right? And the keto diet is going to impair your capacity to engage in those high intensity efforts. So yep. There's no benefit to keto. Like when you look at all of the research data, some people will anecdotally say, oh, when I go on keto, I have less brain fog and so-and-so. When you look at the real data and you look at all the cognitive metrics, there's no real difference to being on keto versus a normal diet. Now, there's a big assumption in there, though, which I really should mention, which is most people who do anecdotally report that they feel better on a keto diet, this is normally what's happening. And this is why in the literature, you get a little bit of a different result. It's because in actuality, what happens is most people are eating a standard Western diet or standard American diet or whatever, which is if you compare any diet to the standard Western diet, it's going to beat the standard Western diet. Okay. The standard Western diet is like killing people left and right. It's like the worst thing ever. So it's like, if I ate like a bowl of dirt, is that better than the standard Western diet? Yeah, it's better than the standard Western diet. Literally everything is better than the standard Western diet. But what you see is that you go from this absolute trash diet, right? And then you have someone who says, you know what? I'm going to go on a diet. I'm going to take my health seriously. Okay. So suddenly they go on this diet and they're taking their health seriously for once. So usually that comes along with, oh, I'm drinking more water. I'm sleeping better. I might start going to the gym. I'm trying to make a concerted effort to have more vegetables and all this kind of stuff. So you go from eating like fried chicken and soda and candy all the time to like eating vegetables and sleeping right and exercising. And obviously your brain is going to do better on that. And so that's usually what's happening when people report that the keto is improving their brain function. But if you have someone who's eating a very healthy, normal diet and you compare it to a healthy keto diet, despite what I would have hypothesized, which is that the keto diet would be worse, you see essentially acutely there's no difference between the two. But there are spin-off effects to being on keto, which might have a longer term detrimental effect on your brain performance. So I still wouldn't recommend it, but there are certain individuals where I might recommend it. So you'd have to talk to me first to see. I can't make a blanket recommendation there, but essentially it's not really going to do too much for the metrics that esports players care about.
For sure. Fantastic. I really appreciate going in depth in regards to that. It's definitely been in regards to diet, IF, keto. It's been one of those factors that's been thrown around in some of the groups that I am in. And, you know, it's just a matter of what's appropriate and what's not. And it's really interesting to see your perspective on it. So I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Just wrapping into the finish now, I'm going to put you on the hot seat. We've got a lot of listeners, a lot of professional players, a lot of upcoming professional players listening into the podcast. And I've had a really good positive response with some previous guests that I've done this at the end is that if you had a couple of words just to share for some of these athletes, what they should start to be thinking about in regards to their nutrition, in regards to their diet, you know, what would it be? What would be the focus?
I don't have to give these people a list of all of the terrible things that they're eating. Like they know what junk food is, right? Mm-hmm. You know. But for esports specifically, the, you know, if you're asking, I mean, I can give you like probably like five tips. I don't have them like in my brain right now, but like where I would start, and I'll kind of walk my way down. Number one, I would definitely start with hydration. Your brain is like, so your body, I'm sure everyone's heard, like your body's like 2/3 is water, something like that, right? And that's your body's way of telling you what's important to it. Like if your body is literally 2/3 water, it's like, okay, that's really important, right? But your brain is even more water than the rest of your body. So what happens is even if you are dehydrated just a little bit, your brain feels it a lot more because it has a higher relative proportion of water. So you're impacting the brain a lot. Now, if you look at performance, as little as like 1-2% dehydration will significantly impair essentially every single cognitive metric that you look at. Excuse me. So you're going to see these massive improvements with massive detriments whenever you are just a smidge dehydrated. And when you look under a brain scan, when you look at someone their brain under a brain scan. So a dehydrated brain is physically shrunken. Okay. It looks like an Alzheimer's brain under the brain scan. Okay. So your brain dehydrated looks like Alzheimer's brain. Mm. And the, you need to take your hydration seriously. That is step one. And it's just going to give you such a huge ROI, like for your efforts. Like it's probably the easiest thing you can do ever. And it's literally going to be like a game changer for so many people. So don't neglect the hydration. That's number one. Now let's see here. Number two, I would say would be make sure most of your foods, I'm not saying all your foods, but like 90% of your foods are whole foods. And that just means like, did it run? Did it swim? Did it fly? Did it grow out of the ground? If it didn't, then it's probably not a whole food. And, you know, you can mix and match different ingredients for sure. Like you can put a bunch of whole foods together and stir them up and whatever. But if you're late, like if you're looking at a nutrition facts label and there's like one thing on there you recognize, and then it's like 100 ingredients that you don't recognize, it's probably not a whole food anymore. It's been heavily processed. And so if you can make the bulk of your diet be whole foods, like 90% of your diet, I'm saying all the time, like I still go home and I eat like my mom's fresh baked cookies and all that kind of stuff. Right. So, you know, 90% of the time you eat whole foods, that's going to be doing you wonders as far as the food is concerned. Step three would be to make sure that you're eating the amount that you need. And the easy way to track that is to track your weight over time. So if you are, you know, like, let's say you just wanted to be your weight. Let's say you're like 150 pounds. And you're like, I want to stay at 150 pounds. This is perfect. Right. But you're trying to do that. And then you notice that your weight is creeping up and you're like 170 the next time you weigh yourself. Something wrong happened there. Right. And similarly, like if you were trying to gain weight, you're like, I wanted to put on muscle, but your weight is like coming down and you're like, whoa, I'm 130 pounds now. What happened? Something wrong happened. So you should be eating the amount that you need for whatever your goals are. So if you're trying to build weight or build muscle, your weight should be coming up. If you're trying to be maintenance, it should be steady. If you're trying to lose weight, it should be coming down. And if it's not doing one of those things as you want it to, then you have a big problem. And you're going to run into brain problems if your energy balance is massively out of line with what you're trying to do in either direction. So if you're starving yourself, that can cause problems. Right. And if you're way overindulging, that can cause problems as well. So eat as much as you need after you're getting in mostly whole foods. The next thing I'll say is you should probably be getting enough protein. A lot of people, a lot of esports players, I think a lot of people have heard that protein's good for them. And, you know, it's like bodybuilders and all that kind of stuff. Like it's pretty internet famous to eat enough protein. However, most people don't realize that protein actually synthesized is the precursor molecule for a lot of our neurotransmitters in our brain. So when individuals, I do see that like vegans and vegetarians and the low protein crowd are becoming much more popular these days. And what you see is that the low protein crowd, they start running into the risk and they will eventually develop problems with their mood, and they will start running into deficiencies of different neurotransmitters in their brain, and different like mood and other sort of cognitive disorders, which is a problem. So we don't want that. As an esports player, you want your brain to be functioning appropriately. the next one is, you know, the healthy fats. So outside of pure fat tissue, your brain is the fattiest organ that you have. So I've mentioned carbs. Carbs are important because it's the main fuel source. I mentioned protein because it makes the neurotransmitters, but, and I mentioned water, which fills up the brain, but of the actual tissue of the brain, it is the fattiest organ that we have. And you need to be giving your body the right fat to build your brain physically. Like it just needs, it needs to be built to the right fats. And so if you're eating like fry food and cupcakes and treats all the time, your brain's going to be built out of that stuff. Your brain will be built out of cookies. Like, do you want your brain to be built out of cookies? Probably not. You want it to be built out of, you know, like fresh fish and eggs and olive oil and nuts and seeds and all those kind of things. So you want to have the right kinds of healthy fats that are going to physically build your brain. Micronutrients are not even going to be an issue. A lot of people like to joke about micronutrients, but if you are following the other things that I just said, where you're eating mostly whole foods and you're eating a balanced diet between the protein, carbs, and fat and all that stuff, micronutrients are going to take care of themselves. You will not need to pop a multivitamin or anything like that because yep. you're going to be eating all that stuff already. So really just take care of the basics. Like if you take care of those, honestly, that's going to get you like 80% the way there. And all you had to do was literally put like the right stuff into your mouth and you would have been there. And then after you correct for all those things, then we can start talking about some of the more like high level protocols, you know, like meal timing, periodization with different nutrients.
Yep.
You can talk about supplements. Like there's a lot of fun stuff that you can talk about at the high level, but the basics is like going to get you most of the way there. So like you might as well spend your efforts there because it's going to give you the highest ROI. Like your return on time and efforts are going to be massive if you focus on the basics. So that's kind of where I would say to start is the basics.
Yeah. Fantastic. I really appreciate that, Casey. There's a lot of players that are listening. They're going to benefit from that directly. Even parents can start to maybe cook different dinners and start to associate what you've spoken about with in regards to performance. So I really appreciate sharing that insight and sharing that mindset in regards to a couple of tips that some of our players should be adopting and should be taking care of. I think that's probably a really good place to start to wrap up the episode now. We've been going for quite a while. We've chatted in depth about, you know, the sports nutrition, that regulation, especially in regards to that youth population, which is definitely a critical area that's up and coming. Then obviously we broke into the big one, the big bombshell, caffeine, really exploring different protocols and timings for that, and then coming in, finishing out with, your keto, your IF, and then some other little protocols as well. So I really appreciate you taking your time out of your day. I know we've gone for quite a while, so I really appreciate everything you've come to share about. There's definitely a lot of players that are going to be listening that can really take away and extrapolate some key information that they can start to just even think about. At least as long as we can start to get that cycle of change, you know, for these players to start thinking about, then I feel like I've done at least a little bit of my goals complete. So I really appreciate you coming on, Casey, and I really appreciate you sharing all your insights.
No, it's been super fun and I really enjoyed it. And honestly, like it was a blast for me. So if you need anything ever, like feel free to reach out. Or if you have any quick questions, like by all means. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I did just want to let you know also is pretty soon, I told you like my website was supposed to be up, but it's literally just like nutrition articles for gamers. If you want to ever like read any of those, some of it's actually stuff that we've talked about, like the caffeine, for example. I have one up there on that. I can send you some of those just as a resource. But
yeah, for sure. Do you have any social medias that some of our listeners can follow you on?
I don't. I it's like a sin in my industry. I do not have any social. When I was in high school, my buddies made a Facebook for me and then they managed it. The only way people can reach me is through my email, which is caseythomasrd@gmail.com. So that's pretty much
fantastic.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at least, so when you get your website posted, we can publish that in the show notes and we can push that out for promo for the episode as well.
Yeah. That, it's gamerdiet.gg.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. Well, regardless, I really appreciate you coming on, Casey, and spending some time and just sharing some of your insights and your mindset towards esports nutrition.
Yeah, no, it's been a super blast. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.